Welcome to The Urban Complex, a system of interrelated, emotion-charged ideas, feelings, memories, and impulses. This name takes the definition and lays out what a listener should expect. A podcast where ideas, feelings, and memories collide, leading towards meaningful change. I'm co-host Chris Richardson. Please enjoy the journey with The Urban Complex. Smarter cities for a stronger tomorrow.
All opinions by Chris Richardson, Dominic Papa, and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Arizona State University or the Arizona Commerce Authority. Any endorsement of or messages from sponsors are solely supporting the production of this podcast. There is no relationship further than podcast purposes with any sponsor unless separately created with another entity.
Hi, Dom. Hey, here we are. Another episode.
Yeah, here we are. Another week. It's warming up here in Arizona.
It sure is, but you look relieved, man. I know in one of our first episodes, I put a little pressure on you. I knew you were doing some coaching, and I told a little story about how I was new at ASU, and people were worried that we wouldn't get repeat as number one innovation, and here we are 6 years later, so I didn't screw that up. But I put a little pressure on you. Brophy had won a bunch of state championships in soccer, and here you are coaching them. And on the podcast, I didn't want to take some fallout at the Urban Complex. So tell us what happened.
Yeah. Happy to admit we won the championship a week and a half ago. I know, right? I'm sure people that follow me on LinkedIn and stuff saw some of the celebration. Oh, man, what a thriller. I mean, double overtime, ended up going to a penalty kick shootout. Our goalkeeper came up big, made a couple saves, and we ended up winning. Woo, man. I mean, I'll tell you what, it's one thing to do it as a player. It's another thing to do it as a coach. I feel like I aged 10 years just in that one last game. I don't know how much more my heart could take with those big games like that, but it was a lot of fun.
Inside scoop where you whispered the perfect thing to the perfect person at the perfect time and made it happen?
I wish I could take such credit and such genius for coaching ability, but really the kids were amazing. They did it themselves. We just put them in the best place to be successful, and they were. So it was a lot of fun. But happy to have some time off now and let my heart recover from that emotional roller coaster of a game.
Totally. Well, congrats on that. And by the way, putting where you overemphasize someone's contribution. I know we were talking last week about how the new intro sounds, you know, fun, gets people excited, and you gave me a lot of props for that. I didn't do much, and I figured in the spirit of our appreciations, I should call out my brother David Richardson, who does a lot of our production. He's actually the one that spliced it together, made it segue in. I actually just found the song and paid for it. It's funny. He's like, oh, you can't give me props for that. You need to prop the person that created the music. I'm like, well, I mean, we paid for it. Like, so it's just kind of funny. He's very modest, but he's a great job. So
that's great. Awesome.
All right, well, let's get to our guests. So tell us who's coming on today. How do you know him?
Oh, yeah. This is one of my favorites. Brandon, assistant city manager, CTO of the city of Peachtree Corners. I met Brandon back, I can't remember how many years ago, but we both were in Barcelona for the Smart City Expo World Congress, right? Largest smart city conference in the world. It's in Barcelona in November. We were both there through an event with our partners, Cisco, TJ Costello, Cassie Roach really brought us in. Again, it's cities helping cities, right? Just the story of this podcast, we immediately hit it off with the amazing work that I think you're going to hear and what they're doing around autonomous vehicles. I obviously talked to him about all the amazing work that Arizona is doing with autonomous vehicles and the Institute of Automated Mobility. And we immediately had this idea of sharing best practices, getting our leaders together to experience what each of them were doing, right? We wanted to do traveling delegations, but unfortunately, we weren't able to do that with COVID. And so Brandon and I have been just really, really close friends and helping each other out, sharing ideas, sharing lessons that we've learned. And so I've always wanted him, when we had the idea of starting this podcast, to come on, because again, it's a story how a relatively smaller and young community can really drive a platform for economic development by embracing these sorts of technologies that a lot of cities want to embrace, but don't know really how to embrace. So I'm excited that there'll be a lot of good pieces of advice for how cities can build these sorts of platforms for innovation, engage private companies, and really drive economic development.
Yeah, it's funny. You know, when you said you knew Brandon and you're going to have Peachtree Corners on, I got excited too, because I know of the project from a completely different angle. We at Arizona State University did kind of a strategic partnership around 5G with Sprint, now T-Mobile, and they were talking about Peachtree Corners in that process. And so I'd heard it from a whole, totally different lens, the partner. So this should be fun. So yeah. Thanks for grabbing Brandon. Should we get him on?
Yep, let's do it. I'll bring him in. All right, Brandon, welcome to the Urban Complex. How you doing?
Doing good. Thanks for having me, Dom, Chris.
Yeah, we're excited to have you. I've been talking to Chris about the story and kind of your story and what you're leading in Peachtree Corners. And so we're excited to really have you on the podcast to tell your story and especially to highlight how really local governments can drive economic development by really creating platforms for emerging technology and embracing emerging technology. So we're excited to have you on, Brandon, to tell your story. So maybe before we jump in, what we like to do is, you know, always get to know a little bit more about the guests that we bring on. So please talk to us a little bit about your background, where you came from and how you eventually got to Peachtree Corners.
Yeah, it's, you know, interesting story to end up where I am now. Been in local government going on 16 years now, but came up through a unique path to get to, you know, technology smart cities. Actually started in finance and administration and worked.
Usually a natural fit there. Right there.
Right. Finance, technology fits right in. And I've always had, you know, an affinity for just tinkering with things, figuring things out. Used to work on cars growing up, built old hot rods through high school. So always, you know, had that brain to want to do stuff like that and carried that over. I actually started in the private sector. Sandy Springs was where I started my career in local government. One of the first cities to do the outsource private public partnership model in the operations of the city. So came in formerly CH2M Hill, now Jacobs Engineering. That's how I started my career in local government. And then the city of Peachtree Corners started in 2012 and had the opportunity to come here and help start the city from ground zero, get them up and running. And you know, did that through my finance operations background. And then about 4 years ago, was hired on directly by the city. And the current city manager saw my desire and kind of lean towards, you know, pushing the envelope, trying new things in technology. And was like, hey, we got to pull you in here. You need to lead these initiatives. Come on over to the city, to the dark side. You know, get your government
employee. So they got you.
Yeah. You know, it's been a fun ride, but I think, you know, having that different background, I think has actually benefited a lot in how we approach and how I view the smart city world and its impact into the local government.
Yeah, I think we're going to be able to see that kind of, you know, private sector background and a lot of the partnerships that you've been able to really bring to Peachtree through the Curiosity Lab. So we'll be excited to discuss that a little bit more, but maybe before we even get there, you know, we're really excited to talk about this story behind the Curiosity Lab. What is it? But before we do, maybe a little bit of a background level set for the audience that might not be the most familiar with Peachtree Corners. Can you give us just a little background on the city itself, population, location, things like that?
So Peachtree Corners is a northern suburb of Atlanta. We're about 20 miles north of downtown Atlanta. The city itself was originally created in the late 60s, early 70s by a former Georgia Tech grad turned developer. He got tired of seeing the brain drain of the graduates from Georgia Tech, Georgia State going and leaving for Silicon Valley and New York. So he created way out here. Back then, it was just farmland, a technology park, which was the first technology park in the state of Georgia. And to use that to recruit tech companies. And it succeeded early on. Had the first modem, the Hayes modem, was invented right here in Peachtree Corners. The color printer right here in Peachtree Corners. Scientific Atlanta was founded here, which is, you know, now rolled into Cisco. So when all that happened, he built the commercial side. Well, all the people who worked here wanted to live here. So our residential side started to grow with it. So we are just over 47,000 residents, but what is also important is we're also 47,000 jobs. So we are a regional job hub for Metro Atlanta, and they kind of grew one together. Fast forward 2012, the city decided they wanted to incorporate, so we became an official city in 2012, so just 8 years old. And then from then until now, you know, I've had a lot of a big focus on economic development, placemaking, and just community involvement and growth, both from the residential and business side.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, I didn't realize it was so young, 2012. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Still a little baby, but doing amazing things. This is going to be great. Yeah. So, okay. Let's, you know, we wanted to bring you on to tell a story around, you know, the Curiosity Lab. So can you talk to us a little bit about the idea behind the Curiosity Lab, how it got started? You know, was it a big idea from a mayor, or was it an output of strategic planning exercise? How did you really, as a local government, especially a young local government, come up with a bold vision like Curiosity Lab? What was the motivation behind it?
Yeah, it's a funny story on how, where we thought we started to where we are now. So Tech Park, which I mentioned, and, you know, the birth of Peachtree Corners, when we became a city, you know, it had gone through its rounds, you know, late 60s, early 70 buildings, kind of faded out at a high 39% vacant rate. And so one of our elected bodies members, our council member, Alex Wright, came and was like, hey, guys, you know, I see the future in autonomous vehicles. We need to get in this. We need to find a way to do it. You know, can we use it for residential transportation? What can we do with this? And so he's like, go figure it out, which, you know, we're a council manager, form of government. So we love that when our elected body tells us to do that, they don't, you know, try and force something. So we actually started, it was funny. The idea started with, okay, well, let's go buy an autonomous shuttle and then let companies come and put technology on the shuttle. And everything was focused around that one vehicle. But as we started, you know, kind of doing our research and talking to experts, brought on some consultants to help us through this. And we noticed that there was one thing that was missing in the evolution of some of this technology. You had really good closed labs, like in city, some out in Arizona, some out in New Zealand. And then you had, you know, your downtown Phoenix, your downtown Atlanta, but there was nothing really in between. There wasn't that place that could graduate from a closed course, go to something that's semi-controlled but still interacts with the public, but it's not quite ready for a completely urbanized area, what we like to call the walk phase, crawl, walk, run. So we saw this missing gap in that. We knew we had what most governments have that private sector doesn't, is public infrastructure. We own the road, we own the sidewalk, we own everything in the right of way. How could we use this asset, something that government's really good at, operating and owning infrastructure, and use it to drive economic development? So it shifted from that vehicle to using the asset that cities own to help bring people here. And so that, after all that research, we reconfigured a road in Technology Park to allow for advanced vehicle, autonomous vehicle testing, interacting with the public. So it is a living laboratory. Put in the backbone and the technology to allow companies to come and hang smart city IoT devices, fed all of this to a 25,000 square foot innovation center that the city already owns, where we operated a startup incubator program. And then said, okay, what's our best way to attract companies and to start these interactions? And that was, well, why don't we offer it for free? So we put all this in and we said, okay, build it and they will come, right? The good old Build a Dreams motto.
Yep.
And so during that process, obviously, we went and vetted the technologies that would help us recruit. And 5G was the first thing that comes up in any conversation. So we went out and talked to the providers, and actually ended up partnering with Sprint, now T-Mobile. And they deployed their 5G back in April of 2019. So we were in the first rollout of six cities for 5G nationwide. And that is also free to use for companies that are testing here. And then, so once we got that platform, we opened the doors in September of 2019.
Wow. And just for, so people know as well, how long is that loop or that close, that street?
Yeah, it's a 3-mile loop, 1.5-mile linear. Got two unprotected left turns, which are always fun in an autonomous vehicle.
Right. Exactly. And what I love, it goes right outside City Hall, doesn't it not?
It does, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that might be one of the coolest parts. If you really want to get your elected officials to embrace this technology, put it right outside City Hall, right?
That's right.
That's great.
What have you seen as the outcomes? I mean, whether it's economic development, I mean, you talked that they started moving in, but like, are there direct, are there indirect things you measure? Like, I'm guessing not just the, I mean, you've seen the press, but like, how has your own city kind of measured it? How have the people that come and been part of it measured? I mean, it's just such a really interesting dynamic going on.
Yeah, no, great question, because that is one we always get asked, because, you know, it is public money that's gone into this investment. So how are we ensuring that what we're doing is pushing the needle forward? Initially, we've seen great return on investment. As I said, the office park was aging. We had a lot of vacant space. Because of Curiosity Lab, we had two companies relocate their global headquarters here. And really not directly related to the smart city IoT world, but they saw the value in being part of the ecosystem. So ASHRAE, which is the American Standard Heating, Refrigeration, and Air Engineers, it's the society who sets the global standards for indoor HVAC systems.
Okay.
They moved their global headquarters here, brought 125 employees, took a 75,000 square foot building that was empty, remodeled it, and they bring in trade show organizations that come in. And then our second company was Brightree, an affiliate of ResMed. And so they do telemedicine operations. They saw value in being close to 5G and what that looks like for their future. Took an old Honeywell DoD building and that had been vacant for 16 years because nobody wanted to touch it. And they remodeled it, brought in another 200 employees. So they're, you know, over 200,000 square feet of office space that was vacant, now remodeled, now people here. They're bringing in people for conferences. So that's indirect revenue sources in our hotel stays. They're spending money in our restaurants. And then now we've got people actually living here. That's the gold dream, right? That's the perfect scenario. But it's all those little things in between that are still driving the needle forward. When a company comes and tests, they're usually staying in the hotel. They're eating in our restaurants. They're spending time in the city. Those are all indirect revenue sources to us. So that's still a benefit. So we track those testers that come in, partners like Sprint and Bosch, who bring customers here to use this as a showcase and experience center. Because there's nothing better to show people than actually getting to see it work in real life. So those are all, you know, indirect revenue sources why they're staying here, eating here. So we're very happy, and, you know, just over a year, and most of that year through COVID, we had 22 different testers, everything from startup to Fortune 500, come in and use the facility. And so I've been really happy with that, and really got to seeing some cool stuff that we'll talk about in a little bit.
Yeah.
So, that's really interesting. And so you mentioned an HVAC, consortium. You mentioned a group that used to be related to Honeywell. I actually was at Honeywell for 12 years. And right around the time I was preparing to come to ASU, Honeywell was investing in Atlanta. So is this where they put their that location, that software? Or was it in? Is it in?
Not that one.
Okay.
We got their DoD side, which, hey, well, you know, it's still good. They still have a big presence here. They've got about 250 employees in Peachtree Corners, so.
All right. Well, sorry to bring up one that got away.
But I
can't imagine it didn't hurt to be in the proximity of the group that's running policy for all at HVAC, because that's a big part of their business.
Here.
Okay. So you did mention earlier, and sorry to kind of cut in and joke around, that you came up through the finance side. Ironically, I don't know if this is the same for cities, but I know in higher education, in a lot of organizations, IT often reports to finance, although that's changing. I mean, IT, we all see how strategic it is. It's part of why, the Peachtree Corner is such a unique thing on the show. But joking aside, like, tell us a little more. I want to make sure our audience understands the financial model. You touched on it briefly earlier, but, a lot of cities want that clear business case. They want to kind of have the plan. Tell us how, a little bit more, how the idea came to light in terms of making it happen. Like, did you have to invest anything up front? It sounds like you did. How did you build skin in the game with the council, with the city? with the surrounding areas, and then more importantly, the companies that came, so they didn't just kind of take the credits and leave. So just kind of help give some inspiration for those that might be thinking the same.
Yeah, no, it's a good question because, yeah, there was skin in the game. I think any true investment that draws return, there has to be. Because if there's not, you're not going to put the effort that's needed to make it successful. So
especially for such a new city, I would guess this was a big, big bet, right?
Yeah, a new city that does not charge a property tax. So we're actually a zero millage rate city. So, yeah, very, very initiative, which, you know, to keep our millage rate zero, we have to do things creatively to drive other financial resources through business tax and other resources so that we're not burdening the resident more. So we looked at sources of revenue that you could use. In Georgia, they have restricted funds and, you know, general fund. Most governments do have restricted funds. So we looked at those over ways that we could use some of that so that we didn't have to go into the general fund that usually pays for a lot of the operations. And we have a transportation tax. Well, what's more transportation focused than advanced mobility, autonomous shuttles? So we use funds from that to really start the process of building the infrastructure out and focus around the transportation on the roadway, the sidewalks, the intersections, and the fiber that connects all of these devices. And then did some remodifications to our innovation center to allow for the collaboration of companies in there to also use that as the base hub for all the testing. So our initial investment was about $5 million all in. And how we were able to bring council along that was, one, going out and finding that strategic partner who's going to come in and invest alongside of us, right? Putting in 5G is not free. So T-Mobile Sprint, made that investment to come along. And so we saw that value. We'd already started some of our research and talking to startups and companies who would you use this facility? I mean, when we had our grand opening on September 19th, we had four of the startups at the grand opening showcase their product that they were going to test in our facility. So we saw that immediate reaction to the facility and the use of it. So, finding unique ways to use revenue streams, billion into the capital budget, showing, economic development, as you all know, it's a hard thing to measure.
Big time.
you throw a lot of nets and sometimes you catch, sometimes you don't. But, using what you're unique at, finding creative ways to do something and doing something that maybe someone else hasn't done, taking the risk to do that. It should be a good factor. And you do have to have strong leadership and support from your elected body to do it. But if you can show, the three things, the investment, what it can bring, and how you maintain it ongoing.
Yeah. That's the kind of thing you want your pitch and then the experience of those that come in early to be as consistent with what you say. But I would guess, if we move to the next question, I would bet that there was, because it was so different, I bet there had to have been something you didn't expect in that value proposition. Like, is there anything that kind of comes to mind that, whoa, we didn't see that coming?
Drones, right? Everyone's favorite topic.
Great point. You wouldn't have even known that when you started this.
Yes. No one knew the direction of where that was going to go. And really, the autonomous vehicle industry, I know we don't like to talk about this because we love our partners, but it's nowhere near ready. When you get into some of these things. And so when we had some of the autonomous vehicles, you're like, are you sure you're ready for a public road? And you get out and you work through some of that stuff, which is great. That's why we created the lab. So I think you start to pull the veil off a little bit on this technology. There's all the hype from Silicon Valley that these things work. When they show it, it works.
So is there a study out that the city of Peachtree Corners citizens have less toes on per capita than the rest of
right?
the
No.
Just kidding.
But yeah, they do a good job making sure. Like, we had an autonomous shuttle run for 5 months, and our lab did what it was supposed to. It caused issues for the vehicle that they had to figure out.
Yep.
Our track's not flat. It's got a 14% grade change. The vehicle was here, his local motor is Ollie. right during fall, leaves are falling everywhere, covering the roadway line. So LIDAR doesn't know what to look for. It hit that hill at 14% grade and it thought an obstacle was in front of it.
Oh, wow.
So these are all things we wanted. We wanted them to test, figure this out before it gets deployed somewhere that's a little more difficult.
Yeah, Ollie doesn't get those conditions here in the desert, that's for sure.
So, you know, it's been interesting just to learn some of the development that still needs to happen in some of these areas of technology, but it's a good thing, right? I mean, these are things that are unexpected the way that you hear it pitch sometimes, but it's a good process and it proves why a facility like this works.
Totally. Yeah, that's great. You know, Brandon, I'd love to get some of your advice on, you know, working with private partners, right? Setting up these kinds of public-private partnerships. Because to me, you know, in being in this local government space, you know, Curiosity Lab is a preeminent case study in the country for how to work with private partners. And so I know, you know, a lot of the people we talk to around the country, you know, it can be intimidating at times, especially when you're talking about these emerging technologies, right? How does my community even reach out to a Sprint, T-Mobile of the world, a Cisco of the world, right? To even consider partnering with them to create these platforms for emerging technologies. Can you maybe talk to us a little bit about maybe some of the strategies, the techniques that you were able to leverage to reach out to these partners to even begin those conversations? To bring, you know, some of these giants in the industry into your community, but then the ongoing working together with private partners, like give us some advice on how that made you so successful.
Yeah, never in my wildest dreams did I think I would ever be such a salesman at all coming through finance. But it's really a model you have to take, and it's surprising some of the conversations you have. You're like, am I really doing this?
Yeah.
But, you know, it's, first, don't be scared to ask, because you know, if you don't ask, you're never really going to know. There's some regional person out there that, you know, is in your area that is really, you know, a lot of times we think they're just looking to make a sale. But we had a regional guy at Sprint who was just a regional salesman. And that's really, we started throwing around this idea. He was like, oh, wait, let me go talk. And that's, you know, it started from the local sales guy and ran all the way up where we had, you know, Jan Geldmacher, the president of Sprint Business here at the grand opening. Awesome. So one, don't be scared to ask. Two, though, you know, do your research in the companies, see what they're doing, make sure you understand what their path forward is, because what AT&T is doing, what Verizon is doing, what T-Mobile is doing is very different. Yeah. So know your arena, know what they're working on, what's their future in this industry, so that you're better prepared for those conversations. But what I think has been really cool to see change over, I'd say probably the last 5 years, is the private sector scene in smart cities, especially, that it's going to take a partnership focus for this to take foothold in the U.S. You know, you look at Europe and you look at Asia, they're years ahead of us in this arena, but they got a little more say-so from an overall government structure to push some of this down. So in the U.S., because we're so segregated in our you know, verticals, we have to have a partnership approach. So, you know, bringing them in here, just having those conversations, showing them the you know what you're offering, what your future looks like, aligning it with what they're doing. And then the greatest part about being a government-owned facility is those companies can bring governments here without violating any rules, right? They can't take them to a Falcons game, but they can bring them to Curiosity Lab because it's a government-owned facility.
Brilliant.
So it's using those things to help them meet what their objective is as well as meeting ours. But, yeah, just start with your local, have an idea, be open with them, be candid about it. You know, tell them what the objective is, and you'd be surprised how open these guys are to talking. The trouble that you get into is we try to be agnostic from the city approach because our goal is economic development, but they're not as agnostic as we are. So when you do go down a road with one, usually that's going to take away some of the others, but it's been surprising. Like, we have Access and Bosch here. They're both doing different things. You know, they're both in the camera market. They're selling cameras. But they're both using our facility. So it can work. But some of the bigger ones are going to be like, oh, well, you went with them, so we're not.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a good point to highlight. It's, you know, I think some governments get stuck or, you know, mired in that kind of, well, we can't choose one or we can't choose other, but then they don't do anything. Sometimes you just got to pick a road and go down it, and, you know, other things will follow. But I think that's a great point. And, we were talking, I believe it was last week, to Gavin in Pittsburgh, and how these actually private companies are now really understanding they need to work better with local governments. I think there's the rival, the company, the electric company out of UK that's, I believe, located in Atlanta, but they've hired local government strategists internally. So these are new positions that these private companies are hiring, which is good, for us from the public sector side to see that. So that's good news.
I really do think you were onto something about America being a little bit more behind, but to Dom's point and kind of what you alluded to there, I think when we get our act together, we're going to be able to scale more, because these companies, as Dom mentioned, they're getting smarter and they're understanding the city way better. Yeah. But America's cities are so diverse, and the way, like, just think about how different Peachtree Corners is than, say, the city of Atlanta, right? And so it's not like these things translate into the next city super seamlessly, but they're figuring out how to make that happen. And by sharing these stories, we're helping the cities think differently. I would guess there will be some backlash eventually in places that it's completely pushed down, because the citizen will wake up and realize, wait a second, I'm not sure. I think we just crossed a threshold I have no idea is good for me, right? Now, whether they have the ability to kind of push back or not, it's different. But I think that's a really interesting piece. Anything to comment? I'm just listening and hearing kind of your experience with the city and from Dom's experience of what he's seen with the vendor, but I think it's an important part to highlight.
No, it is, because you're absolutely right. Each city, right, we all have our unique characteristics about us. We're all different. That's why there is cities. That's what makes us great. That's what makes residents move to certain places, because they like the character makeup. They like what the side of that city is doing. Like, just us, and we have a city 10 miles north of us, Suwanee, Georgia. Couldn't be more polar opposite. Very artsy, embraces the arts. It's, you know, you go down there downtown, there's art everywhere, painted on buildings, and you love it. And it's great for that community. And you come here, it's just a different feel, right? But what I love, and this is where Dom and I, when we first met, really talked a lot about, is how do you take those individual characteristics of cities, but still have the regional approach to this technology? Yeah. Because you're absolutely right. You can't leave Peachtree Corners, who's high tech, and then drive into the city right next door, which there's 9 cities that adjoin Peachtree Corners, and then everything just fall apart.
Right. When you look at some of the other industries that seem to have been really advanced with tech, things like just commerce, you know, retail in general, right? E-commerce, you find like Amazon, obviously they found some key things and then others can emulate. And then you create that software layer where commerce changes. You start to look at restaurant industry starting to happen too. It just takes longer because there's way more players. It's complicated, massive physical infrastructure, but the costs are coming down. And when the costs come down, you can start to really look for those consistent things. So yeah, let's bring it back to tech for a minute. Tell us, like, what are some of your most fun projects that you've seen, either in terms of the promise, and we know some, they don't always work out, or just things that you know through the lab are allowing your city to do, or that you kind of keep your pulse on that a company's trying that you think people need to be aware of?
Yeah. Probably some of the most fun is definitely the teleoperated e-scooters, because it's just it's crazy to see. So thank Uber, but for an e-scooter, you call it on an app, that thing drives to you, and then when you get off, it repositions itself to a central location, help defeat some of the clutter that's on the sidewalks. But when you look out your window and you just see this e-scooter driving by with nobody on it, what is going on?
Do they stay in a set lane? Like, is it literally, yeah, it's like a track?
They maneuver. So it's a teleoperation component. So we got a person in Mexico City is remote controlled into the e-scooter. It's got a camera on it, and they're driving it just like a video game. Interesting. So that's probably one of the coolest ones. You know, they've learned a lot, and they're actually deploying 300 of them up in Boise, Idaho, with Spin. And they went from a two-wheeled scooter to a three-wheeled scooter because they figured out some of the things that didn't work, which they got to test out here in the lab, awesome. Which with a kickstand and a tree branch, they like to fall over that way. So they learned that. But it was a lot of fun seeing a startup kind of, you know, embrace a new thing that's actually solving a problem. So that was a lot of fun. Some of the ones that we've really been watching are definitely going to be robotics delivery. We've got a lot of interest in that. Companies, a lot of Georgia Tech startups testing robotic delivery. How does that integrate with city infrastructure? Because we're building a massive 220-acre, not us directly, but a private developer, 55 and older age community. That's about a mile from our downtown where all of our shopping and restaurants are. Mm-hmm. How do we support them through mobility options with assistance delivery robots to autonomous shuttles, keep them connected as a part of the community, but provide services that are a little more difficult for them? So that's a big one that we're focusing on because it's going to take some infrastructure adjustments because, you know, running a 3-foot wide robot on a 5-foot sidewalk next to a person can be a little challenging. So those are ones we're watching closely. And then, you know, for better or worse, traffic is still a big issue. Even post-COVID, we're still going to see a lot of, we're very car-centric. It's going to be a long time before we get out of that. I loved your episode on, you know, complete streets with no cars.
Yeah, cool. Cul-de-sac. That was
love it. Cool, yes. But probably not going to happen in the suburbs of Metro Atlanta.
Yet.
I'm one of the worst, you know, I live literally 1.4 miles from City Hall and I drive an F-150. So I'm worst case scenario, but that's, you know, the majority of.
They'd tell you to get an e-bike. They're
one of them. So would my wife, but. But how we integrate some of this, you know, package delivery into the ecosystem, into the infrastructure, while maintaining the quality of life that you want for your residents. Because drones, you know, love them or hate them, they're noisy. Yep. Like, how do you incorporate all of this but still keep a high quality of life for your resident? Because we are in the suburbs. You know, people move to the suburbs for a reason, but we've also got a forward banking community. 29% of our residents work in the tech industry, which is, you know, a high percentage. So they're embracing this, but they also want their quality of life to be maintained. So we like that. And then traffic, looking at ways Bosch is testing their new video as a sensor on our intersection. You know, how do you use LiDAR on an intersection? You know, get it off the vehicle, put it on the side, and then, you know, testing the difference between that to better enhance. And then we're really starting to break into the edge computing in the traffic controller itself. So I think we're right on the cusp of seeing all the data come off of these devices feeding into the traffic controller itself to really start making real-time decisions. So those are our key focus areas.
That's great. So if, go ahead, Don.
No, I just want to highlight, I don't want this point to be, I think, lost on our audience is, you know, you spent the money to invest in this infrastructure to create this platform. Yes, one for these emerging technology companies to come here and test. But everything that you mentioned, it's almost essentially an R&D lab for the city, right? Because all of those things like scooters and traffic congestion and, you know, intelligent intersections, those are all issues that cities are grappling with right now. And it's hard for them to just go out there and test those ideas or try to understand how do we, you know, transform our infrastructure to accept these emerging technologies. So what you've created is almost an internal tool for yourselves as well, is it not, to understand what the city's going to need to do to prepare itself for X challenge or Y issue.
Yeah, I think that's probably the hugest benefit to us that maybe we didn't see. Chris, you asked what was one thing we didn't expect. I think that was one of them, is really getting to be at the forefront of some of this technology to help us learn as cities and to work with the private companies to say, hey, guys, this isn't going to fly.
No.
Great idea, but it's not going to work. And it's just a multitude of.
I mean, you can even show them with data, or you can show them what's done there, or you can ask people and you have a new dialogue because you're attracting those people that want to contribute, or they're doing it or whatnot. Like, I'm even stunned as I'm listening to your plan as a city, that here you are now thinking about a 55 year and older community. I mean, think about, you wouldn't think a tech hub that started from a research park that's doing all this stuff would even be of interest to older generations. But I think it's so, I think that's just because people using old, you know, kind of old mindset. And I think that's a really cool outcome. So, like, tell us more about that. Like, what sort of advice would you give to city leaders who are looking to leverage this technology as a platform on what it can do or how it affects the brand? I mean, because I think that's one of the coolest things I would have never guessed before we started talking to you on this.
Yeah. I think if you look at the statistics, the amount of people who are going to be retiring over the next 10 years is going to be higher than the workforce itself. Mm-hmm. As we look at our communities and we want to keep a thriving community, you don't want them leaving. You want them staying in your community. So how do you integrate the new services and needs that they'll have and into what you're already doing, but also still attracting the younger, the working class? So we're doing a good job of finding the mix of, you know, redeveloping existing office space to meet these needs. So we've got a project coming up next month on our agenda. We've got, you know, just a single story, 9-acre, 1970 office building is going to be coming, mixed use development, townhome, apartments, you know, restaurant, dining, and then integration of all of your technology into that to really attract and maintain your working. But then over here, you know, working with the private industry to say, okay, we see this need for older adult living. You know, they're empty nesters. They had their 3,400 square foot home. They don't want it anymore. The kids are out. We want to keep them in the city, but they're also, you know, they're well involved in the community. You know, they've done a lot to invest in the community. So you want to keep them here and not move up north where a lot of these places are getting built. So it's really, again, that working with the private industry to see the need in the community and to find a way to meet it while still using some of the fun stuff that, you know, just because you get older doesn't mean you stop playing technology. Doesn't mean you like to stop playing with new toys.
Or that technology can't help recreate your environment. And again, you have these relationships. You can think differently about how do you deliver goods to people, but still have their quality of life high? How do you allow them to get the things where they can walk and keep, you know, healthy food at their things? Or, like, I noticed on the way you highlight things publicly, you talk about your parks and you talk, and I'm thinking you're getting people to those parks as their mobility, their physical mobility decreases, you find ways to get them there. I think it's really interesting.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny. We talk a lot about the technology to the side, but sometimes we forget the basic, you know, infrastructure that cities can put in to support those needs. You know, don't negate what a trail system can do for a community.
Oh, yeah.
By connecting things. Like, you don't have to have technology to build the community. You can use the technology to better those resources, but, you know, making the investment in that, you know, we've.
And you can use the technology to see how they're getting used and make them safer and to augment them and move the parks. Like, we're looking at some really interesting park ideas here in Phoenix. So, love to share stories on that sometime too. So we kind of shift into two questions we ask all of our guests, just because, you know, Dom and I, we know we can't make this happen alone. We've seen our own smart city initiatives. It just takes a lot of folks. You kind of alluded to earlier. Is there anyone that has helped you along the way that you want to publicly note in terms of appreciation, either for your career path or what's going on at City of Peachtree Corners, that you think our audience would like to hear that story?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're only as good as the people around us. You know, I would be amiss not to just thank my staff and, you know, our IT department, who, when I come up with this crazy idea, they find a way to make it happen and keep us secure, because cybersecurity is a big risk that all smart cities are facing. You know, our public works team, especially our public works director, Greg Ramsey, you know, he takes a lot of the brunt of these initiatives because all of them involve infrastructure. So he's happened to manage all these new crazy ways to build roads and sidewalks. And then really, for me, my career path, I've been very fortunate to be behind some really good, great leaders, some really good city managers. Our current one, Brian Johnson, he really pushes the envelope and has really let me do what I want to do and get to, you know, do stuff like this and take risks and have big ideas, and, you know, tells us to keep going, try. If it fails, try again. Yeah, so
that's good. So when something does go public, it doesn't come right to Brandon.
That's right. He
helps deflect.
He helps deflect. So, yeah. And then former city manager, now retired, Don Howe, out of Colorado. He's really who got my start in local government, and gave me my first job in local government. Really, that's where that passion started for this.
That's really cool. How about looking outside of Peachtree Quarters? Is there, as you've learned a little bit about us and the urban complex, is there anyone that you kind of think is a show worthy person, guest that we should have on that's just doing amazing things?
Yeah, I think Dom knows most of them. I mean, you've got your big ones, you know, that we love. Michael Pegas is up in Aurora, David Graham out in Carlsbad, Jennifer Sanders down at the DIA. Nicole up in Cary, those are the ones you hear a lot about. But I think, you know, what's interesting is we're starting to see the smaller cities really start to be like, okay, we can do this. Like, we met with the city of Ruston, Louisiana last week. They came out here. They were like, hey, we've got to figure this out. So, you know, talking to those guys who are early in their journey, to say, hey, you guys are starting to explore these. What are some of these things you're doing? And, you know, as we've gotten farther into this, I think sometimes we forget what it was like in those early, early stages. Yeah. So definitely reach out to them. There's a lot of awesome people in this space. You know, it's really cool to see. I think that's what's been different about really the smart city world, is there really has been a collaborative approach to this. You know, we're all fighting to recruit and retain Untouched, but we're all in this for the same goal, and that's to provide better services to the residents and quality of life. So it's really been cool to see that come apart. Ty Hayes down at City of Atlanta, if you've not talked to her, she's recently been promoted to Gary Brentley's position as CIO of City of Atlanta. Amazing woman, is doing some really cool stuff.
I'll tell you what, selfishly, I met her somehow, and I've been trying to connect again. I know she's invested in some people on her staff that are doing great things too. If you can make an introduction there, I would be a great, great person. I've been watching what she's been doing on LinkedIn. Yeah. So.
Be happy to.
Awesome. Yeah, well, you know, Brandon, I keep telling Chris, we're going to build that delegation, and we're going to come out to
That's
you
right.
when we can. We had that great, Chris, I don't know if you know, but when me and Brandon met in Barcelona at the Smart City World Expo, that was our idea, is to have these delegations, especially because what we were both doing in autonomous vehicles. We'll come out to Peachtree, they'll come out to Arizona, and then, of course, COVID.
so the urban complex can go on the road.
We're
gonna find some sponsors, make it happen.
We'll do a live show from Peachtree, from the lab, from the
curious. We've got a podcast room ready for you.
Right.
Awesome.
Exactly. Well, Brandon, thanks again for coming on, sharing some of your advice and your time with us. You know, I've absolutely loved the story, watching what you're doing. And so we'll have to definitely have you on, you know, in a year or so, and see how that story's continued to progress. But we really appreciate you coming on and spending some time with us.
Yeah. Thank you both. Appreciate it. Always good to talk to you, Dom. Chris, great to meet you. Look forward to working together in the future.
All right.
Nice to meet you too.
Thanks, Brandon. Well, have a great rest of your day. We'll talk soon.
All right.
Bye. Thank you. See ya. All right, Chris, Brandon, what'd you think? Peachtree Corners, Curiosity Lab.
We finally had the show. Like I said in the kickoff, like I've seen this from a different perspective, and things came out that I just would not have expected. First of all, even with tech, like I didn't realize that the driverless scooters, meaning the scooters that are autonomous, that would be actually remote controlled in from somewhere else. Like, how brilliant is that? We find in the tech world that you can't often build the end-to-end solution out of the gate. People think you have to, and then it becomes like this 3-year project, and then it's like massive investment. And But yet, if you do it a different way, like what's the minimal viable product to get out where it's a solid service? And they probably figured out, hey, the building that artificial intelligence to have it drive itself is going to take years. Well, let's just hack it and let's have someone remote in and remote control it along a road. At how brilliant. But to you and I, if we were calling one, we know the app brings it to us. We know it drives itself. Like wow factor's there. We don't even have to know it's remote controlled. And then once we're on it, we're in control. So I just thought that was a really cool idea.
No, it's really cool. And I think it goes to highlight another thing, especially for me, the local government side. It's this idea of creating this platform for these innovations to help drive one, economic development or the commercialization of products for companies like that. But then two, how can we leverage it as a city, right? That doesn't have the money or the budget to do R&D as Grant from Pittsburgh mentioned, but they're using this in public investments, yes, to drive economic development, but to also drive, you know, the improvement of internal services, of internal or of infrastructure improvements, right? But what I really was excited to bring Brandon on is a lot of communities think, okay, well, why don't we just call ourselves an autonomous vehicle test hub or you know, we just want to, that's our name, but they're not doing anything to help attract these companies. What Brandon in the city of Petrie Corners was very, very upfront about is, yes, we will spend taxpayer dollars to invest in this infrastructure to show we have skin in the game, right? To prove to these companies, to these university startups that, you know, we want to be this platform. And so we'll invest alongside you. And they did it and you've seen the results of it. But again, right. And me and Brandon have talked offline on this. Yes, it's deploying autonomous scooter technology, but he's also working with his public public works department saying, maybe we should redesign the way sidewalks are created, or maybe it needs, you know, intersections need to have this aspect to it. Right. But it's actually a living R&D department for the city as well. And they've invested in it themselves. So I really want to get
there. And they're listening to their partners. Like they're thinking about where to invest. They're listening to the potential companies that are coming there. Because back to your point, just calling yourself an autonomous vehicle testbed, if you know, the players that are trying to figure out where to go to kind of build their market, they can sniff it out if it's fake or not. But yet, like they're knowing, okay, well, we need advanced 5G check, you know, the Sprint partnership. They're helping them. Sprint then, you know, has their relationship with all the SoftBank partners. And so I'm sure that has a lot of tie back. They're building this ecosystem. And think about it, like near the end of the show, I was like scratching my head going, wait a second, they're building a 55 plus community now. And like, I bet you they didn't have that plan when they first started Peachtree Corners and this Curiosity Lab, because who would have thought, given the current lens we operate in, that the elder population care about a tech-enabled city? Well, guess what? You know, I was sitting at Tempe at a stoplight the other day, and there's this woman trying to use a scooter, and she was having a tough time. Now, I'm not saying that the scooters coming to show up is what that 55 plus community is, but they're thinking about, all right, how do we get them goods and services easily? How do we transport them to where they can be mobile and get healthy food and still be active and contribute back? Like, I just think they're really thinking this thing holistically, and they have all sorts of ways to collect data to see if they're on the right mark.
Totally. Think about it as a market share, right? For the Amazons of the world, they're going to have to deliver to these elderly, these older communities as well. Cities have to deliver services. We both have the same customer. Why don't we really try to leverage that joint, I guess, customer interaction to, one, from the city's perspective, improve their quality of life to live in Peachtree Corners. From Amazon's perspective, okay, now we understand how to best deliver, you know, drone deliver, autonomous robot deliver packages to elderly elderly populations with their own challenges and their own issues, right?
The reason why I'm cracking up though is I had a funny feeling with Amazon, you were going to go to the drone delivery. And I just have this, I wish I knew what was causing Brandon some consternation, because clearly drones was a hot point. He brought it up like two or three times. So somehow maybe the city manager isn't giving him too much air cover on the drone side of the noise with the citizens.
They're loud. They're loud. Yeah, they sure. Well, that's great. So yeah, again, Brandon, wonderful friend, wonderful colleague. Excited to see the trajectory of where Peachtree goes. And I also think it's a perfect example of how a young, smaller community can really become national leaders in the emerging tech space. So great story for the Olympic Complex. Happy we were able to get them on finally. Cracks in the Pavement, what are you thinking for this week? Do you have anything for us?
Yeah, I've been doing some research, and you know, this one, I don't understand why it's happening, but because we're still in COVID, yes, people are getting vaccinated. People are looking like, I know we keep joking about that we're going to get on the road. I know both you and I have traveled just a touch, and we'll be out there soon because things are coming back. But yet, if you look back on the data from 2020, pedestrian fatalities are up. Driver fatalities are up. What's going on? Because like, if you were to think about it, there's got to be less people out walking. There's definitely less people out driving. So how in the world are pedestrians getting hit? How in the world are more people having fatalities while they're crashing? Like, are people just feeling more comfortable and driving faster? Are people feeling more comfortable with less cars on the road and walking more? Like, I don't know. And when I read these stats, it's odd that usually there's causality, and I'm not finding good definition of why the numbers are up. I don't know.
It's those sorts of answers are obviously way above my head, but I do know it's a major issue that we're looking at here in the greater Phoenix region. I believe Phoenix is number one per capita highest pedestrian fatality rate in the country. More people die on our roads anywhere else. And, you know, we just recently submitted a big federal grant to look at pedestrian fatality. So while I can't answer it, I think it's a perfect cracks in the pavement. Everything should in our hearts or in our minds at least tell us that those numbers should be going down, but yet they're going up. Maybe it's, I mean, this could be a perfect opportunity to find, you know, a guest to come on who maybe has more technical experience or in-depth experience into this area to see why.
I'll tell you what, we've had some great guests on in university cities. You know, today, yeah. You heard reference to Georgia Tech. Last week, you heard reference to all the Pittsburgh related universities. Selfishly, I had a plug Arizona State University and our faculty. So if anyone's listening that has good ideas why this might be happening, reach out to us. I'm Chris at theurbancomplex.com, Dom at theurbancomplex.com. We'd love to hear kind of your theory and see if we can get you on the show.
Yeah, that'd be great. Well, what do you think? Is that a good episode?
I think it's a wrap.
All right, let's do it. Thanks everyone for joining. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to The Urban Complex, smarter cities for a stronger tomorrow. Please find us on where you listen, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. We do love your feedback. Let us know if you have ideas for guests or questions to air on Cracks in the Pavement via social media. The Urban Complex is found on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter. Or just shoot me an email, chris@theurbancomplex.com. Till next time.